Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, CPG advisor and now founder of It's All Happening, an agency that helps brands with launch strategy. Tune in as we break down ways that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles, and celebrating the wins. We cover how brands are taking products to market, tactics that work, things that have failed, and just lessons learned from out in the field. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or launching a brand, this is the place. Okay, you guys, I just hung up with Danielle Orlana. She is the co-founder of Mitts, which is this really, really cool sponge brand. You might be thinking, a sponge brand, but let me tell you, if you don't know this brand and you're a wine drinker, or you don't even have to be a wine drinker, you just like to drink out of a fancy glass, I'm telling you, you have to buy a Mitt. It is the best. When Danielle first signed up for Launch Lab, I was like, oh my gosh, this brand is so cool. I'm so excited to be working with them. And they had just launched. Her husband is also a level 4 sommelier. Like, he's like this incredible wine expert. And they decided to create a sponge because they had a problem where they kept breaking expensive stemware and wine glasses and wanted to create something that would help preserve their nice glasses and stemware. Danielle talks us through how they engineered the product, how they got it manufactured, all the things that they had to learn when they were first launching their business and just didn't know anything about CPG. She joined Launch Lab because she really wanted to learn about retail and start to venture into retail, specifically in the natural specialty grocery space, which is where ultimately they want Mitts to live. But since then, they've grown into over 30 doors nationally, and they have like one major e-retailer as well too. And they just updated their packaging, so it's much more retail ready and not just D2C friendly. Danielle also shares with us how they have gotten all this insane press since they launched, which has been so cool to see. Write-ups in Bon Appetit and Food and Wine and just incredible, incredible press, plus brand partnerships and what her approach to social media is and how they don't necessarily show up every day on social and they're not doing like the typical founder building in public and why they've decided to do that. So if you love a good founder story and you'd love to hear about how somebody actually took an idea, created a product, got it to launch, and then successfully operating it on their own, fully bootstrapped, this episode is for you. And without further ado, my conversation with Danielle Orlana, co-founder of Mitts. Danielle, welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm thrilled to have you here.
Hi, Danielle. It's been a minute.
I know. It's been a minute. I can't wait to talk about Mitts and everything that you guys have been up to these days. Before we dive in and we get into all the nitty-gritty business stuff about Mitts, which I can't wait to hear about, I want to hear what you are currently hustling for. What is your main priority right now?
So our main priority is retail, retail, retail. Last year was our first really big year as a company. And so we weren't fully ready to get into the retail side of things. We just were kind of like, let's focus on DTC. Let's get a hold of that channel first. Let's see what's working, what's not working, what the feedback is. And this year, after we have 1 year under our belt, we feel a lot more comfortable pursuing retail.
Yay. I love that so much, because when I was working with you, we were really just kind of helping shape that vision and how you were going to go to market. So I can't wait to get the whole update. And obviously, I think this brand is perfectly positioned for retail as well too. So tell us about Mitts, Danielle. It's such a freaking cool company. I love your product and your brand so much. I've had the pleasure of working with you in Launch Lab. You were in the first cohort last year in March of 2025. And so I really got to know a lot about your product and your story and all that. So tell us about the brand.
So Mitts was born truly out of a problem that we experienced firsthand. So my husband is a level 3 WSET. I love to cook. He loves to eat my food and also pair it with wine. We're famous amongst our friend group for this thing called Sunday Night Supper, which started when we were dating. So the way the tradition goes is, you know, we'd go up to Italy, we'd buy the groceries. At the time, it was myself, my husband, and his roommate. We were still in residency at the time, and we'd get all the goodies, and my husband would pick out an incredible bottle of wine. And then, you know, we'd always do the cleanup. And even back then, when we were, you know, you have so much limited money as a resident, so we would get like maybe one or two nice wine glasses, and we'd treasure them. But when you are either hand washing them or you put them in the dishwasher, more often than not, we would break them. And so many, many, many years later, one summer we were on vacation and we were just, for whatever reason, the topic came up. Actually, I remember it's because I had broken two of his favorite pair of Gabriel Glass wine glasses, which are these beautiful, like hand-blown glasses. And as a gag gift, I bought him a brand new set. And we were just talking about how it's so silly that there's nothing on the market for this and it doesn't make any sense. And that's where Mitts was born. And then the next morning we woke up and my husband was like, do you think we could really do that? And I am more risk prone. So I was like, 100% we could do this. Like we're doctors. We can figure this out. And, you know, as I'm sure every entrepreneur finds out, it's a lot more than you can imagine. I'm really grateful that I have a partner in this though.
Yes. Okay. So let's rewind though and talk about your background. So you guys have like very unique backgrounds. You said something that most people probably didn't catch about your husband being a something, something, something. Like, okay, we don't know what that acronym means. So like expand upon it, please.
So he loves wine and then he became very serious about, you know, the theory of wine and the pairing of wine. And so in the wine world, there are two main schools that you can go to get your accreditation. So that's like when you go to a restaurant and there's a person that comes out, and if you're looking at the wine list, they'll come out and be like, oh, are you looking for anything in particular? That is your sommelier.
Yes.
Those people who are in the industry, they pursue a specific certification. So you have to work in the restaurant world.
Yeah.
To pursue that kind of certification. Everybody else can undergo WSET, which is a separate entity. And it's just kind of like, I want to be certified in wine and I want to know about wine theory, but I don't necessarily work in a restaurant or work in the food and beverage.
I see.
My husband pursued that. Yeah. And so he's a level 3, which technically is not a sommelier the way that we formally use it. You can call yourself that, and some people do. But the next level is level 4, which is when you get your official diploma and it's like a full-blown master's, a thesis in wine. And that is one's all day.
That's so cool. I want to come over and have dinner with you guys.
Oh my God. He's the best at it too. I mean, you can ask him. I'll text him on the fly when I'm out with my girlfriends. I mean, I always joke that like I know things about wine through osmosis from him, but just like he uses these like fancy terms and these words about pairings and like notes and stuff like that. And I'm always just like, I don't know what that was, but it tasted really good.
That's so cool. I love that. So, but separate from being wine experts, tell us about what you do in your 9-to-5, in your regular life.
Yes, we have no background in marketing, food and beverage, anything. My husband and I are both dentists. He's an oral surgeon, and then I'm a pediatric dentist. So like truly couldn't have been more removed from this world. And I always used to, I mean, it was just like totally came out of nowhere. I always joke that like the first time that I heard the words TAM, total addressable market, was literally in your class. I was like, I was literally in a class being like, I don't know what that means, but I think I'm supposed to know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you guys decided to start this business because you kept breaking wine glasses because your husband's in the wine education industry. Okay. So when was that though?
That was the like summer of 2021. It was right after the pandemic. So he, while we were home, well, we weren't home. I was home. Like elective procedures in medicine were home for 3 months that first summer of the pandemic. The only people who were not are the people who are considered like our emergency people. So the ER docs, the nurses. And then for us in dentistry, it was oral surgery. So like oral surgery was still at work because they manage life-threatening infections, et cetera, et cetera. People break their jaws. That's where you go. So I was home and he was working more normal hours, which was literally just like 9 to 5. But for us, that's normal. And so we were home a lot more and we were drinking a lot more like most people were. And so that's how he got into his studies. And he took level 1, level 2. And then that summer, 2021 or 2022, we were on vacation and we were like, this is a thing that should exist out in the world. We started Googling and like, you really couldn't find anything outside of like a bottle brush, truly.
Yeah, totally. No, I mean, I'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
So for anybody who hasn't seen your product before and doesn't know what we're talking about, describe what you guys have created.
So if you think about the way that a wine glass looks, like the bowl of a wine glass, our sponge is designed like a beak. So it looks like two little claws and it opens and closes. And the texture and the material of it is not like a typical sponge. So it doesn't feel like a Scotch-Brite sponge. It doesn't feel anything like a Brillo. It feels more similar to like a makeup sponge, like the beauty blenders, a little bit more similar to that. And so the opening and closing of it allows you to put your whole hand into the bowl of the glass and then go around the entire rim of the wine glass. So it feels more like you're using your own hands versus a rectangle or a square or a circle, which you then would have to shove into the inside of a cup.
Which is so genius. Like it really, yeah. It really is. It's just like, why has nobody ever done this before? You know, I know you get people say that to you all the time. Like, why has nobody ever done this before? But it really is true though. It's like, it's such a unique shape. And so
it is a very unique shape. And when you think about a lot of the tools in your kitchen, so when we created it, you know, when we were getting the prototypes back the first time around, I was playing around with it a lot in the kitchen and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I can like wipe down my chef's knives with it because you can't put those in the dishwasher. And it was like, oh, my nice chopsticks, I can wipe those down. Like pretty much anything that is delicate or that you was expensive or something inside of your kitchen, you can use this for because again, you don't have to fold it. It's shaped like your hands.
Yeah. Okay. So 2022 is when you really started pursuing the business. Where did you start? So like you're really a fish out of water at this stage. You know what I mean? Like you hadn't taken Launch Lab, like you hadn't really immersed yourself in the industry. How did you know where to start and what did you do first?
We quite literally Googled, how do you start a business? We were on the way home. I think we were in Shelter Island that weekend. And we woke up the next morning. And like I said, literally, my husband, who's more risk averse, was like, you really think that we could do this? And I was like, yeah, of course we can. Like, it can't be that difficult. People create businesses all the time, right? Like, you see product launches everywhere. And so on the way home while we're driving, quite literally, like we Googled how to start a business and it was like, you need to create an LLC. And we're like, we need to create an LLC.
Oh my God, the best. I love that.
We need to do market research. We were like, we need to do market research. What the hell is market research?
So did you do the market research?
Yes. So from there, we were like, okay, so we need to find an engineering company. And then we were like, does it have to be a specific engineering company? And then we started being a little bit more thoughtful in the sense that we were like, okay, these are the like first 5 things that we need to do, which is we needed to find somebody to manufacture our product. And we needed to look into where manufacturing could even happen. And then we had to consider, you know, packaging and branding, right? Like those were kind of the first few steps that we had to take. And then we decided that we wanted to work ideally with as many people who were in the state of New York, because that's where we are. And so we just were like, if they're close by, then it's easier for us to either meet up or meet them in person or just kind of keep eyes on the product. So that was our main goal. And so our engineering company is in New York State. They're not too far from us, like maybe 45 minutes from New York City. And we reached out to them and we started sketching it on a napkin, literally, like, this is what we want it to look like, ideally. And then we sent that to them. So that was maybe Sunday we drove home. Monday we were emailing them and sending them the sketches, like, just took a picture on our phone, sent it over, and started the process of, like, how do you even get a sample, right? Like, how do you figure out who can make it and what different materials to source for it? Which is its own thing, because when you're starting from zero, you don't even really know what it's supposed to cost to just be in that research phase, right? Where you're like, is it normal for it to be this expensive? Or like, how many different people should we reach out to? You know, at what point is it too expensive to keep asking for a different, you know, material, or to keep asking for them to modify the shape? And it's like, is perfect getting in the way of good? So that was all like the beginning stage and took a lot longer than we thought it would.
How many iterations did you go through?
I want to say we went through about 5. In the beginning, a lot of the shapes for me and for Lee as well, but we were just kind of like, we want this thing to exist because it needs to exist. But we're also big on the idea that we didn't want to just make something to make something. We wanted it to be useful, purposeful, and actually functional, right? Like, I'm very much a minimalist. I don't like having things that don't work or that you get rid of like once and done. That really bothers me. So I was like, there are lines in the sand that I'm willing to like cross and like, fine, we don't have to be perfectionist about it. But the shape and the integrity of the product, I was like, that I'm not willing to like budge on. So we had a bunch of different designs in the beginning that I was just like, no, that's ugly. Like, I would not put that on my kitchen counter. And the reason I wanted this to exist is because I was tired of looking at the things that did exist on the market.
It looks so beautiful sitting on your counter. So tell us about the little stand that it sits on too.
So each mitt individually, because it's shaped like a claw, on the top, you have 2 little finger slots where your fingers can go in and you can very easily and organically move it just like you would move your hand. And it sits on top of a base. And again, for me, I live in New York City in an apartment and space is obviously very limited. And so I was just like, I really hate when I go to the sink to wash stuff and I have to take my rings off and there's nowhere to put it. Or I like put it somewhere random and then I forget. So I was like, ideally, I would like something to hold the base so that it sits up and dries. I hate when I have a sponge in the sink and it's just like sitting there semi-wet and gross and soggy.
Ugh.
And then it smells and it gets moldy, and that's why you have to change them out so quickly. So I was like, I would like to create a base for this sponge that serves 2 purposes. One, it will hold my jewelry when I'm at the sink. And 2, it will help keep the sponge upright so that it dries and kind of drains. So that was like the next task that I gave this poor engineering company. But we went through multiple iterations of that.
Well, they sound amazing too. Like
creative engineering, which they really
Okay. That's the company you worked with. Yeah. They definitely delivered. So, okay, you get everything together. Like, okay, you finalize the format. You build the brand. Who did you work with on the branding? Your branding is just the best.
So our brand, I have to agree with you. I feel like the branding is outside of exactly like you said initially when people are like, oh, this is such a genius thing. Like, why has nobody done it? The next thing we get is like, your branding is so cool.
Yes.
Back to like our obsession with staying with people in New York as it happens. My husband was downstairs, I think studying for something for one of his wine exams, and he met someone in our apartment's lounge, and he happened to be in marketing and branding.
Oh, wow.
And so we met with him, and he was like, I really like him. He's great. He used to work at one of like the bigger agencies, and he branched off to do his own thing. They're called Make Super Good, and they're incredible people. And so we met with him in person. I met him, and we were like, 100%, this is what kind of vibe we're going for. This is the audience that we're going for. This is the message that we're trying to send. And they gave us exactly what you see now, which is our vibe is essentially seriously useful, stupidly fun. So like
so
wine is amazing. Yeah. And fun. And but it takes itself a little bit seriously. Like, you know, people think that like wine and wine people are very snooty. So we want it to be more playful and feel approachable.
So launch. You launched 2024?
Late 2024, right before this past holiday season. Yeah.
What was the launch? Like what? Okay. You've got the product. The product's in the warehouse. Like you and your husband are dentists by day. Yep. So we get a warehouse set up, I assume, because we need to automate things since we can't be packing orders ourselves.
It's funny you say that because I said to my husband, I was like, no, we'll just have them delivered to our apartment and like, we can totally just like pack the orders ourselves. And he was like, you're literally out of your mind. I love the enthusiasm, but absolutely no. And he was 100% right. But we had a 3PL company set up, but launch was chaotic. Launch was chaotic because...
Why was it chaotic?
Launch was chaotic because my husband decided truly out of the whim. I mean, we had everything had landed. It was in our 3PL facility. We were just kind of trying to decide how launch would look. And I'm not kidding you. One morning, we have like a group text with our branding people, our PR person. He literally just woke up and was like, okay, like, let's just turn Mitts on. Let's make it live. And he literally just turned on Shopify and like blasted it on his social media page, our like Mitts social media page. And then like orders just started coming in. And I was like, oh my God, this is insane. It was like 2 p.m. on a random Tuesday. And I was like, I wasn't ready for this.
Oh my God. That is hilarious. Your wine husband. He was like, no, we're doing this now. But okay. So the website was built.
The website was built.
But why were you not launching?
We were trying to decide, like, what day do we launch? And, like, should we build up to the launch and, like, market it and promote it and, like, create social media buzz first? Yeah. And he was just like, no.
Yeah.
We're going today, literally.
So orders started coming in, and was it like friends and family?
So far, I mean, not so far. Our entire business has been bootstrapped by my husband and I. So like all of our money that is outside of, you know, whatever our regular expenses are, went straight into building this business. So we didn't get any outside investment. We didn't take any loans out. But when we launched, I feel like that was kind of like a soft friends and family because it mostly was friends and family. And that was a really good opportunity for us. We got lucky, in my opinion, that when we did do that, it was friends and family mostly because they gave us a lot of really good feedback. And that was kind of like a really nice way to enter into sales and understand like what happens when somebody literally hits purchase and all of the places where there can be snags and hiccups and, you know, what to do when somebody's order gets delayed or like they delivered it, but it's not in my porch.
Right. Yeah. So working out the kinks of just like running a product-based business and having to deal with operations and logistics and...
Which we have no... I feel like, again, we really underestimated how much work goes into the people who are in marketing and branding and all of the other incredible positions involved in like the CPG world. There is so much thought that goes into all of this, and it really does require all of the different talented people that do it. You really don't know until you do it, right? Like to us, operations is just like, you know, we don't know what that means in the medical world. We're just kind of like, okay, sure. That's a position apparently.
I have a question for you. Are you running in circles every month and stalling yourself out, missing out on sales? You're just like doing endless research because you're trying to figure it all out on your own. Maybe you're confused on how to price your product, how much margin you'll need, if you're going to be profitable. You really don't know how much startup capital you're going to need. You're lost on what to spend and what's reasonable. And you don't have any clue really on how to build an operating budget. Maybe you can't get a manufacturer to answer your emails and you're not sure if you need to spend money on an R&D partner. And then when it comes to retail, you just don't even know where to start. You never successfully pitched to a retail buyer or an investor, and you could really use some guidance and framework. you might not have any clue on how to figure out which channels to launch in and how to determine when it's time to open up new ones. And I know that you really want to launch your brand, but you just don't feel confident that you have the right information and strategy to be successful. So let me help you de-risk your investment. This is what we do in Launch Lab. I guide you through my 4-part framework that teaches you exactly how to launch your food and beverage brand successfully. You'll get a complete toolkit that will take you through the step-by-step process, and you'll have access to a founder community so you can build alongside others who are in the same shoes and at similar stages where you network inside of our Slack channel. You have access to me specifically in office hours every week where you come with your questions and I give you real live operator-led feedback. There's 2 ways to join Launch Lab. You can join our live cohort, which happens twice a year in March and in September. These are 10-week cohorts that kick off and run 4 days a week. If you want to get started now and it's not March or September, you miss a sign up, no worries. We have the pre-recorded version running all the time, so you can join at your leisure whenever it works for you. So stop stressing out, start de-risking your investment and getting a real launch plan together. Check out itsallhappeningagency.co/launch-course. Okay, now, all right, you're selling direct to consumer. Then what? If you join Launch Lab in March of 2025, I remember you coming in and being like, we've got this brand, we're selling D2C. And I think you may have had a couple accounts, maybe not though, actually. And you were just trying to like figure out how to navigate the business and just enter into the world of CPG because your larger vision is to have this product at the grocery store, in Whole Foods, in Sprouts, et cetera, like in the kitchen section, which I love that strategy for this product. And that's why I was like, yes, you should definitely work with our group here. So since then, that was a year ago, a lot has happened in the business. You, I imagine, are no longer in 2 accounts.
So we are now in 30 retailers across the US and in 2 in Canada.
Amazing.
And so we did it in a, unlike our launch, we did it in a controlled way. I think the launch was a really good lesson that we learned. We were much more controlled and we did it in baby steps, meaning in the beginning, I thought like we need to like constantly be pitching to as many stores as possible and just get in. And then we just were like, you know what? Let's take a step back. Retail is truly for a brand the thing that is going to keep you afloat, right? Like it used to be that you could have a cool idea and a cool brand and launch D2C and that was enough and then just create social media buzz. That's just not really in my experience how it works anymore. You do need wholesale. You need a big account to kind of keep you afloat and then help you grow and expand. So we were like, let's just kind of see where this fits. We think we know where it is going to land and what places will do best with it, but let's see what works. So in the beginning, we were doing very small, like wine shops and shoppy shops. Because our theory was this is going to be in like, you know, millennial to maybe like Gen X home who is hosting or has a dinner party. We wanted buy-in from the wine people as well. So our focus was like shoppy shops and wine stores. And surprisingly, it does the best in mostly like niche home goods stores. So not necessarily like a shoppy shop that is mostly like snack centered, but more home goods and like curated home goods is where it does the best. And so at first we just kind of wanted to keep it tight. So New York first. And then we were like, okay, let's expand a little bit to like stores that are within the East Coast. Because we wanted to maintain the relationships and make sure that they felt right, like we were supporting them and that we were present. And so that was kind of our strategy. Go slow and small, see what works, where it does best, who has to reorder, how frequently they need to reorder. And then another online company, they're not retail, but Uncommon Goods, more like a gifting site. They're our largest retailer at the moment.
Nice. And how many locations do they have?
They're just online. They're straight online. So they're like separate, but they're our largest other stockist outside of brick and mortar.
Are you selling through Fair?
Yes. So we're on Fair. Yep.
Would you say that that's how you are breaking into these accounts?
Correct.
Do you find out about these accounts and then reach out to them, or do they find you on Fair?
Mostly they're finding us on Fair.
Okay.
Which is how we prefer it, because I think when a store is interested and invested in you on their own, they've kind of already decided that you fit, versus when you're reaching out, it is a bit more difficult, at least when you're starting, right? Like us, you don't know if your theory is right. You, the founder, think that you belong here, but you don't really know.
Right. So you're going the anti-sales route. This is interesting.
Correct. We are, which is so funny, but we're doing it the complete, like,
it's very dentist of you.
Way.
It's very dentist of you. Yes. You're like, actually, we're not going to sell. We're just going to be here. And we're...
If you like us.
You like us. You think we look cool. So yeah, let's do this. That's the vetting process. I love it.
Pretty much. For right now.
Yeah, and that's fine. So what kind of things are you learning about your customer and people who are shopping the product because of your retail outlets that you're in?
So what we've learned so far is that our product is definitely our younger range is millennial, and then all the way up to like an older age range, which I did not imagine. So like even our parents' age up to like upwards to boomer, which is totally fine. I know, but not what I would have thought. But it very much falls into like two categories, which is niche person who is very into food and wine and into like the idea of dinner parties.
Mm-hmm.
And then older couple or older, you know, individual who likes food and wine and, you know, just through years of experience in cooking and drinking, sees the utility of the product, like understands it because of how long they've been doing what they've been doing.
Right. They have their glass of wine every night.
That's exactly right.
And they love like this luxurious, like really unique, nice sponge to ensure that their nice wine glass is thoroughly cleaned. I love that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is like the dinner party person, which we didn't expect to have such a wide age range, but it does.
Yeah.
So we've also noticed that like our big target is the food and wine, like somebody who subscribes to Food and Wine magazine or to like Bon Appetit is essentially like,
that's your person. Yeah.
That's your person.
Okay. So let's talk about marketing. So what have you guys been doing? I know you were working with a PR agency for a minute. Are you still working with PR?
Yes. Her name is Emily, and she is like the best acquisition that we ever made. She's fantastic at what she does, but more than anything, she totally understands our vision. And she knows that both Lee and I are very committed to the slow growth process.
Mm-hmm.
So she knows that we're more interested in like quality media versus like getting us into as many, you know, outlets as possible. We actually just had a really beautiful write-up in Bon Appetit. Kelsey Youngman, which is such a founder moment. I literally almost had tears in my eyes because I was like, she gets it. Because she was just, the way that she was describing Mitts is exactly what we wanted people to get out of the product. You know, she's talking about all the different use cases for it in her house and like, why exactly you do need this specifically to clean your wine glasses versus just putting it in the dishwasher. And I was like, yes, I feel like she is talking directly to me.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. You've had like some really good write-ups. Yeah. No, like you have. You've had some like really good press mentions. And also, I know gift guides have been like a big thing for you as well too. But yeah, you guys have gotten like a ton of press. So do you see when you get a press mention and and Bon Appetit, do you like immediately see a spike in orders?
We do. And we always will see at least some spike in orders when we get a mention in media, in traditional media. But depending on the like quality of the write-up is truly the difference. Like when we were in Food and Wine in print this summer, that was huge. Like we woke up one morning, we were like, something's going on because we woke up and like our Shopify app was like blowing
ding,
up.
Ding, ding. Yeah.
Yeah. We were like, something's occurring because it happens during the day, but not so, you know, frequently first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
And then this write-up from Bon Appetit, it was like, lasted for a good 4 to 5 days where it was just like through the roof.
Amazing.
It's like when you get a really good write-up where the person does an excellent job at describing, you know, the pain point that your brand is solving for.
Yes, yes.
You'll see the spike in the sales. So again, for us, that's why we're like, we want a quality write-up. We want someone who understands what we're doing versus just like pitching it at anybody and everybody.
So you've got PR going. You have, what are you doing on social? I don't think I've looked at your socials recently, but like what is happening on Instagram?
When I started, I felt like, again, I feel like, and Expo West was kind of like this. I was watching it just from like afar. Everybody has this idea, or at least it seems to me that the overwhelming sentiment is that, you know, you need to go viral and like you need to constantly be on social and you need to constantly be posting and you need to constantly be face forward and everybody's looking for their like $5 million, you know, Good Culture cottage cheese buyout or any of the other like the big poppy buyout, right? Like
$5 billion.
Crazy. But everybody is chasing that, right? And so for a long time in the beginning, I felt like that's what we needed to constantly be doing. But as it turns out, our audience, that's not our audience. Like our audience is not Gen Z or like the same way that the people in the snack world behave. It's completely separate. So we've kind of quieted our socials in terms of content. And now we only post things that are, again, like very targeted or directed. So it's like if we get a nice write-up or if we have a really great collab, then we'll feature it. Or if there's just something important that we want to say about the brand or about something that's about to happen, then we do. But we've kind of learned that less is more for our audience.
Well, I think, yeah, that's such a good lesson for people who maybe don't have like a Gen Z audience or like a, you know, an older millennial audience or maybe younger millennial audience. and because it is crucial, social is crucial, and creating buzz organically on your your social channels can literally make or break your brand.
Absolutely.
But I think your learnings, your lessons about like know your audience is really interesting, right?
Yeah, it is very much like know who it is that you're talking to, right? Like when you are on social media, understand that you have an audience of one and your audience of one is your customer. So while everybody else might be doing other things or maybe things that look different than you, it doesn't matter. You kind of have to drown that out. You need to do what is specific to your audience. And our audience is, you know, they don't, like I said, they're more so in the older range. And so they're not looking to be constantly inundated with content about us and about Mitts. It's kind of meant to be this thing that you get. It solves a problem for you. You don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah.
Right? Like until you need to change it out, which hopefully is in a few months, depending on how frequently you're using it.
Yeah.
And that is the vibe that we try to give on our social media. It's like, you're not going to hear from us every single day. You're not going to get a video of us washing something every single day. You're just going to kind of get what you need to know when you need to know it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. So, okay, what is next for Mitts? What is on the horizon? What does the future look like? Tell us.
So now that we played around with retail and, you know, made mistakes and also had some successes, the biggest reason too, while we were kind of like, let's test out what retail looks like, is our initial packaging is not retail friendly. Like it just is not.
We definitely spent a lot of time talking about that, how it needed to change for retail.
So we just kind of spent a few months seeing how it does test, right? Like, we know in theory that this is not good for retail because there's nothing on the packaging that tells you what it looks like inside. And so we were like, but let's see what it does in a Shopee shop or in a home, a curated home goods store when they have one on display where they have a little bit more space versus like a Whole Foods or a big store who is kind of like, this is where you live. And then we went back to the drawing board and we redid our packaging specifically for retail.
Okay.
So we redid our packaging and we also nixed a few SKUs where we were like, the least performing was the yellow.
Okay.
Yellow is leaving us once we're done with the last bit of starter kits that we have. The three ups did really well. People liked them. So we kept that and we got rid of the single unit because it was the worst performing in terms of margins. So we kind of slimmed it down a little bit and then also slimmed down our packaging for retail.
Okay. So now you only have the red?
Correct.
Is the retail packaging also the D2C packaging now?
No. So now we have two separate packages. And so now that we have that retail packaging ready, now we're like, okay, we tested it out. We kind of did things on our own. We're now this year going to try and push the selling portion of retail where it's like, we go out now. We have an idea of where it does well. We have an idea of how it sells, when it sells, and you know what the packaging needs to look like. And that's sort of what we wanted. We didn't want to go in completely blind when you start hooking up with like a broker or an agency or somebody who is kind of, you know, getting you with a big box retailer. We wanted to have some experience under our belt just so we could understand, right, what this person is doing for us and the nuances of that part of the business.
Yeah.
So that's in store for us this year. We're probably going to ramp up over the next few months to try to be in for this holiday season. Of really fun collabs coming up, which we're excited about. So,
yay. And what type of collab, like what types of companies are you collabing with?
So, one of the collabs that I can tell you about because we're like done, signed, sealed is there's this really incredible ceramics company called John O'Penoffy. I mean, it's beautiful home stuff even before this. I've had their stuff since, I don't even know, pre-pandemic, like 2019.
Yeah.
And so we're doing a collab with them because their stuff, although it is dishwasher safe, it is like this beautiful, you know, like serveware stuff that is what I wash mine at home with mitts.
Yeah.
So we're collabing with them. And then we're working on a collab with a wine glass company.
Ooh.
We're still, we're like solidifying that, but we're going to do that. And that'll be holiday season, a sort of like a gift with purchase thing.
Amazing.
Which is big for you when you're a small brand because it's like you're essentially using a bigger brand's social proof for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So does your PR person also help you with brand partnerships?
She does. And she's incredible at it.
Yes, amazing. So is that the one marketing area of marketing that you have invested in?
Yeah, I would say a big portion of our investment in marketing specifically is because we're a baby brand and we're also a brand new concept. You know, there isn't specifically another item that is doing the same thing that we're doing. So we essentially have to bump up against other types of home goods that have a similar ethos as us, right? So it's like we can't like partner up with another sponge because there isn't anybody else really doing what we're doing. But what we can do is partner up with the products that we take care of and say like, this is a product that we can take care of and we're similar. So that's what we've been investing a lot of.
Yeah, yeah. And do you guys run paid media? You don't run paid media.
We do, but like very, very limited just because, again, we're like learning how that works.
Yep.
And it's really easy to like light money on fire with meta ads. Like
it really is, isn't it?
Insanely
easy. I know. Yeah, you need a professional. Like you need someone who knows how to navigate that dashboard to like
exactly.
really get ROI on it. Otherwise, yes.
It's insane. It's so expensive. And especially around holiday season. Literally, I have personally essentially lit money on fire with meta ads.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So to a founder just starting out that's got an idea for a product, what type of advice would you give them that you wish you would have had?
Definitely, just start. Don't worry about the fears and the anxieties. You have to get started first. And then the only other piece of advice that I would say is really invest in the market research. We did, but we did it accidentally, like I said to you. For us, it was mostly friends and family, and that was our feedback. But if you know what your product is and you know, or you at least have an idea who your audience will be, send it out. If you have a chip company or a beverage, go where you think that audience lives, right? Go to a yoga studio and bring your beverage and give it to people as they're coming out and ask them to give you feedback, because it's the best way to really understand what exactly it is that you're fixing, what is the pain point. And then also, you might think this works, but actually the audience wants something else.
That's so true. I think that we could all use, in the world of launching products, we could all use a little bit more validation and testing just to get it right. Even though we don't want to paralysis by analysis, right? Hold ourselves back, but also I see it a lot. If we would have just tested this one thing asked a few more questions about this specific thing, we could have ended up saving a lot of redos.
Yeah, really get the market research. Get started, get the market research, get that whole aspect of your business going. You need to know exactly what it is that your audience wants. I mean, that's the most important thing.
Yes, absolutely. Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with me and sharing your story. I love hearing about all your growth. You guys have come a long way in a year. It's pretty impressive.
We have. Oh, and that's the other thing that I would say, in my opinion, go slow.
Yes.
It does not need to be this viral thing. You do not need to be the next Graza. It's okay. Build your audience, build your customer base, do things in your time.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for saying that. I feel like a lot of founders need to hear that. So yes. All right, Danielle, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Danielle.
Yes. And we will keep following along on the Mitts journey. Talk to you soon.
Talk soon.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. It would mean so much to me if you subscribe, or share this episode with anyone who you think needs to hear. And if you're launching a brand and you need a CPG strategy advisor, visit my website to check out what we have to offer. I host free workshops from time to time. You have to sign up for emails to hear about those. And you can join Launch Lab, which is our group cohort that teaches you the four critical phases of launching your CPG brand and how to actually execute your launch quickly. We also do one-on-one advising. So if you book a profit plan session, I will assess your product profitability and recommend a package that works for you. You can book a call at itsallhappeningagency.co. You can email us at hi@itsallhappeningagency.co. And follow us on Instagram @itsallhappeningco. See you soon.